present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from the Hammersmith and Fulham newsletter read by Susan Ray.
Plans for massive sewage tunnel unveiled as dates of two public drop-in sessions are announced.
And our thanks to Gerald Slowcock for sending that in. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Francesca Martinez. And opposite them on my left, Samira Ahmed and Bob Mills. Jeremy, who's promised to deliver a first-class flotation?
Vince Cable, who's announced that Her Majesty's Mail is being privatised, which will be great because everything that's been outsourced in recent years to Serco or A4E or G4S has gone swimmingly. They might forget to find any postman, or they might just recruit a load of people who've just come out of prison having carried out very violent crimes to be postmen who just sort of throw a petrol bomb through your window with your mail tied to it. I don't know. But anyway, I was reading about it on the Telegraph website and there was a voting thing. I thought, well, I'll vote. Are you in favour or not? And I voted against privatisation of the Royal Mail because it is, after all, Her Majesty's... Because the Queen owns envelopes and swans and the coastline. And I thought we should preserve that for her, you know, because she's got very little to do and having a paper round is, you know, something... something to do in the early morning. But I clicked vote against, and then I clicked on the thing that said see how the voting is going, and overwhelmingly readers of the Daily Telegraph are against privatisation of the Royal Mail because they consider it to be the family silver, which is quite interesting because I think most people who think that they're Conservatives are far more left-wing than they think they are. Because they live in villages where people live kind of a communal existence and everybody shares things and trades in agricultural implements and grain and things like that. They say, well, of course, the post office is a natural monopoly. It's a public service, which is part of the social and economic infrastructure of the country, like the NHS. So, obviously, those sort of things should remain in the public sector, along with public transport and, indeed, the banks, which, of course, should be seized by armed students and revolutionary guards who should take control. So, basically, what we need is workers' collectives to run the post office. And Cable, in a sop to the workers, has said you can have some shares, which will be worth a lot when we sell it to you. Might then plummet, but...
But apparently the flotation is going to be the most ambitious for 20 years. Clearly not seen my attempt to mount a Lilo. I Velcro it to my swimsuit and then I blow it up once I've got it on.
Is the Queen's head still going to be on the stamp when it's privatised?
No, it'll be Richard Branson. Or
yes.
The one mistake poor old Vince did was he said, what we're trying to do is take a twin-track approach. And I just think, if you're trying to up privatisation, don't use a railway analogy. No.
What do you think about it, though, Bob? Are you in favour or not in favour of it?
I'll be quite honest. I was surprised there was still such a thing as the Royal Mail. I haven't sent a letter for 5 years. Doesn't everyone emails
no,
now, don't they?
Amazon? Don't you get Amazon back?
Is that the Royal Mail, Amazon?
Yeah.
Well, it's delivery.
Oh, well, it's a brilliant thing, then. Don't privatise it.
Apparently, there has been a 25% decline in letter writing over the past decade. And I looked at that and I thought, I hadn't realised it's 10 years since Mary Whitehouse had died. So...
I've got to say, as a wobbly woman, I love emails. Because basically, occasionally, if I'm about to ask for my autograph, I'm like, OK, but it's going to be unique and I've never seen it before.
I think my problem is I don't get letters and I don't send them, but I think that's partly because of where I live, the 21st century.
Here's a story, right? When my dad proposed to my mum by letter in 1951, she thought about it and she thought, no, because think of the children we'll have. She wrote a letter saying, do you know what, I think it's all a bit soon and maybe we should just be friends and things like that. And then, having sent it, and it already be winging its way on the night train, she suddenly thought, no, I want him, and she sent a telegram, which in those days was a modern innovation. And the telegram said, ignore letter, the answer is yes. Now, today, she would have just changed her Facebook status. Twice. And that's not romantic, is it?
If you got a letter like that today, you'd look at it and go, oh, it's another one of those Nigerian proposals. The business secretary, Vince Cable, has announced that the process of privatising the Royal Mail will begin this year, with all of the 150,000 Royal Mail employees officially being offered shares in the delivery company in a letter sent via email. The Royal Mail immediately issued a new set of stamps depicting things they'd like to do to Vince Cable. What can I tell you about them? Don't post anything second class for a while, that's all I'm saying. You will not want to lick the back of that. Right. 2 points to Mr. Hardy. Francesca, who hopes their reforms will reunite the party?
Well, this is Ed Miliband, who's come out and finally said something. apparently, he wants to end automatic affiliations with the Labour Party and unions. And I think on the face of it, this may appear rather democratic, but I think it's a preemptive strike. I think he's seen how low the support is for Labour. And it's like a break-up time, you know. He's basically saying it's been really nice, but I think we should see other people now.
Miliband has pledged to implement the changes before the next election. I thought it was just as well. There's no point in doing it afterwards. He won't be there. Tony Blair said, I should have done it when I was Prime Minister. I have to say, it's not clear whether he meant the unions or nuking Iran.
They've worked out, haven't they, that Ed Miliband and the Labour Party could lose 1.2 million in funds if they break this link with unions, which is about sort of 2.5 Tony Blair speaking engagements.
I don't know whether he's a genius or not.
Who are we talking
Miliband,
about?
Ed Miliband.
I can help you with that.
It might be. But he might be. On the one hand, there's part of me thinking that somewhere, wherever the Labour Party are based, that there's a load of blokes suddenly going, he said, what? I thought you were looking after him. No, he said he was going to the toilet. I didn't know he was going to make a speech. On the other hand, what he has done is he's pulled the rug out, you see. He's pulled the rug out because always the default system for any people on the right is always to say, oh, what do you expect? They're owned by the unions, aren't they?
The unions do worse out of it than Labour do because, I mean, really, the unions giving money to the Labour Party, it's like lending money to a gambler who's got a system and promises you, his luck's going to change.
Ed Miliband has announced plans to reform the Labour Party's relationship with the unions following claims of vote rigging by the Unite Union in Falkirk. Labour will now have to find another way to replace Unite's millions, said Ed Miliband, as he washed my windscreen at the traffic lights. 2 points to Francesca. Samira, whose proposals on pay are raising more than just eyebrows?
This is about MPs' pay.
Yeah.
The independent body that was set up after MPs' expenses to try and sort out the mess of their finances said we should raise their salaries by about 9%, which, given that public sector workers are only allowed to have a 1% rise, looks like quite a lot more. And bizarrely, you're in the situation where all these party leaders, like Ed Miliband and David Cameron, are coming out and saying, no, we can't possibly take all this money, we don't need it. And then you find out that one of the reasons that they want to raise the salary is that they can then sweep away stuff like £15 a day for dinner if you stay after 7:30. £30,000 for resettlement, because obviously being an MP, it sort of takes you out of the real world and you need to be resettled like you kind of landed on Earth.
Did I really get £15 a day for dinner?
Yeah, a non-alcoholic drink and a meal.
That's obscene. You can't get a dinner for £15.
You just think you have all these people with private incomes like David Cameron, who's a multimillionaire, or George Osborne, yeah, or Zach Goldsmith, and they say, oh, no, we don't need this salary rise. So you risk this other situation where no one will become an MP unless they have a private income, which is like, you know, the bad old days that we don't want to return to.
Yeah, but the important thing, Samira, and no one's paying enough attention to this, by the time you've had two starters,
yeah,
right?
What about BBC salaries? We should be doing that, really, yeah, shouldn't we? What was that payment that bloke had for his some money to just go away and keep quiet money?
But why do you and I never get that? I've not had so much as a bourbon for free.
Well, I'm sure if we had a whip round for Jeremy, we'd do all right, wouldn't we?
Do you think Mark Thompson will go to prison? I hope so, because he was a rubbish DG. Funny thing is, somebody like Mark Thompson, who made an absolute gentlemen's reproductive organs of running the BBC. is hired by America to be president or something, or run Walmart, because Americans just think, oh, I love your British accent. Why don't you come here and run things down? And like any flipping person who can handle a spoon suddenly ends up running America. And they just think, oh, you guys are really, really intelligent. I love the way you speak. And then you just end up with Piers Morgan and a man... And who's that other one? Cary Grant. He's all right.
Welcome to Ramblings from a Home. The Commons Expenses watchdog IPSA has proposed that MPs should receive a 9% pay increase from 2015, raising it to £74,000 a year. Nick Clegg pledged that he would refuse any pay increase. Ed Miliband then pledged that him and his MPs would refuse any pay increase. David Cameron is expected to say that him and his MPs will refuse any pay increase and then march naked through Downing Street, flagellating himself while giving away his belongings to passers-by. 2 points to Samira. Bob, who was at the very top of their game earlier this week?
Is this tennis?
Yes.
Andy Murray won Wimbledon.
Two Hooray. Points, moving along. Yeah. Now!
He did. No, firstly, congratulations. It's very hard to win Wimbledon. I'm not a big tennis fan. I watch Wimbledon, but tennis to me is a bit like sex. I'm only interested in the very end bit. I don't... No, it takes a long
what
time.
What a gentleman you are.
So, well done, firstly. Well done, Andy. But then it all went crazy, and they started saying crazy things. People who should know better, sports journalists who know about sport. At last, we've got a British champion. We've waited 77 years, but we've got a British champion. Well, Virginia Wade's
yes,
sitting there.
Yes,
Ginny's sitting there, yes. Bless her heart. And you see... Please, please stop saying that. And then just when you think they're sports journalists, they can't get any more stupid, John Inverdale turns up. And I have a problem. I sometimes get mistaken for John Inverdale because we've both got that sort of slightly Radovan Karavich hair we've got with the... But John Inverdale...
But I'm looking at you, darling, and that you are so not like John Inverdale because when your mouth moves, I can tell there's a brain still working behind it.
John Inverdale then scuppered the whole of Andy's success, made this statement, forgive me, but I'm really not a turn. Is it Marion Bartoli?
Yep.
Is that her
no.
name?
Yeah.
Thank you. Who won the ladies' championship. And what he said was, I wonder if her dad said to her when she was a kid, listen, Marion, you're never going to be a looker, so you're going to have to be a fighter. You're going to have to work hard. And when you think of that, you think, right, I've got a daughter. Lots of people have got daughters. You would never say that to a kid. So, firstly, no, her dad didn't say that.
You know how John Inverdale made it worse? Didn't he say he meant it in a nice way?
Yes. Inverdale apologised, calling his remarks ham-fisted. And what's got ham fists? Oh, that's right, sexist pigs.
Must be terrible, though, if you're not beautiful and, you know, you have to rely solely on the being able to play tennis part of the game because you've got none of those having blonde hair and standing around skills. Must be a nightmare.
Yeah. Isn't there that saying, if God had wanted women to be judged on their ability, he would have made them men?
Oh, I love that.
It's so superficial. And I'm thinking, God, what would John Inverdale say about me? You know, she'll never be a walker.
I have to say, some of the reporting was breathtaking. In the hyperbole, there was one of the people said, years from now, people will ask, where were you when Andy Murray won Wimbledon? I thought, I don't know, but it's a question that will come to intensely annoy Abu Qatada.
I just hope now that Murray's finally won it, that dragon of a mother gets off his back. You know, you say, all right, woman, you've got what you wanted. You've been living through this lad for years. You've got what you wanted. He's won Wimbledon. But is he happy? Because he doesn't look like he's happy. Have you ever thought about that? Yes, he scuttles between two poles. He's either got that kind of ugly triumphalism or maudlin self-pity, depending on how the bat and ball game is going that day. But I don't think he's happy. I think at the end of his life, he'll look back and say, Well, I spent my days in pointless and mindless exertion so that I might temporarily own some shiny things. And then once I was in my late 30s and over the hill and too dull to do commentary, I had to watch others do it in my own branded range of polycotton sportswear. That was my life. I hope you find this wisdom useful.
You left out the multi-millionaire part.
Oh, yeah, there's that nice bit about the money. Andy Murray became the first British men's Wimbledon champion for 77 years after beating world number one Novak Djokovic in straight sets. Murray won the match 6-4, 7-5, 6-4 in 3 hours and then went on to produce a personal best of two actual smiles. It was one of the toughest moments of my career, said Murray, after enduring afternoon tea with David Cameron. At the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Francesca have got 4 points, but so too have Samira and Bob. We start round two with a cutting taken from the BBC Two digital listings page.
A day in the NHS. The air ambulance crew rushed to the scene of an accident in London, while in Birmingham, a medical student makes a 16th sperm donation. Contains upsetting scenes.
Thanks to Terry Hazard for sending us that. Jeremy, who's getting all territorial over their deterrent?
Oh, this will be Her Majesty's Trident. Trident is a three-pointed nuclear weapon that lives in a submarine in Scotland. And it's very, very important because even though we are America's bitch, we pretend that we are in some way independent. We have a contingency plan, which is hugely expensive and we could get rid of it easily. But there is this idea that you need it. And, of course, the trouble is it's in Scotland and the SNP don't want it, so if Scotland goes independent, then they can just fire it at us or get rid of it or sink it or scupper it or turn it into some art piece. So we're saying, you know, the MOD is saying, what are we going to do? If Scotland becomes independent, we'll have to have a little bit that we keep, like Guantanamo Bay in Cuba, and we'll just keep that bit.
But if we scrap Trident, then Britain's defensive capability is basically Hadrian's Wall. And since the invention of the ladder, that's not the deterrent it once was.
Yeah, but that was set up to defend us from Picts, angry Picts. And if Scotland goes independent, we will want them to get rid of Trident, because otherwise, one drunken Saturday night, a bunch of Glaswegians will nip down to Faz Lane, dip that thing in batter and fire it at us.
Apparently it cost £20 billion to relocate Trident. That's based on the cost of sending it second-class posts by a privatised Royal Mail.
What I love about the government's attitude to the nuclear deterrent is that at the moment it's in Faust Lane in Scotland. And as you quite rightly say, if the Scots do vote for independence, which is their right, we need to annex that little piece because it's going to take us a long time to move it. But eventually, fine, then we'll rent it for 10 years and then we will move it to Wales. But basically, we need it, but not near London, is what we're saying.
How do we annex part of Scotland when they've got our nuclear weapon, though? That's the thing. Hand it over, Joel. Come on. Don't be a fool. Just give us the Trident. Come on.
Stop.
Don't be a fool. You're a clever lad. Don't be a fool. Don't throw your whole life away. Hand over the nuclear weapon. I don't think so. We don't know how it works, but we'll have a good try anyway.
Tell you what, if they do have independence, they'll have a hell of a fireworks display. The government has distanced itself from reports that it plans to reclassify the Faslane Trident base in Scotland as sovereign territory ahead of a potential yes vote in next year's independence referendum. The suggestion has enraged the SNP, which is dangerous because Scotland have got all the nuclear weapons. The only weapon Westminster has got is William Hague, who knows a bit of judo. 2 points to Jeremy. Francesca, who may have had a particularly good week?
Is this about Abu Qatada?
It is.
He finally was deported from Britain after, like, £1.7 million was spent on them trying to get him to leave, which, awful lot of money. Mm. Surely there's easy way of getting him to leave. Like, I don't know, they could have made him a CEO of a big company and then asked him to pay tax or something. What made me laugh, though, is he was flown private jet. And I thought, you know, if you're that angry with him, make him fly Ryanair.
No, because they'd promised he wouldn't be tortured. So
Theresa May is counting her blessings this week after the long-awaited deportation of radical cleric Abu Qatada to Jordan to face terrorism charges. The deportation of Abu Qatada has taken more than 12 years. Abu, as I feel we can call him now, known him a long time, actually arrived at Heathrow 5 years ago. The rest of time was spent queuing up at immigration. Yep, Theresa May has spent 8 years trying to get rid of that bearded man, but sadly, Deal or No Deal remains on the air. 2 points to Francesca. Samira, what new channel sounds barking mad?
Oh, an American TV company is launching a dedicated channel for dogs. Mm. This has caused a huge sort of scandal because the idea that we leave our kind of beloved little ones parked in front of the television all day instead of taking them out and engaging and interacting with them is something we should only do to children.
I've got the programme listings here. Friday, Rough Justice. Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, Dale? Crap in the Attic. Who Do You Think, Chihuahua?
I don't think it's that crazy because they got Fox TV foxes. So.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. You could have a remote control with a big pause button. I feel my work here is done. Dog TV, the first 24-hour channel for canines, is to launch across the United States. Programs feature a mixture of stimulating animation and calming real-world sounds. And then at midnight, the channel turns into Dog TV XXX, featuring the hottest in cushion-humping action. Signs of audience distress include howling, gnawing, scratching at door... No, sorry, that's the feedback from Ben Elton's sitcom. Sorry, that's a completely... totally different thing. 2 points to Samira. Bob, listen to this. Bob, is it a bird? Is it a plane? Is it a conference room with tea and coffee facilities?
It's a nitwit. That's what it is. How this got in the newspapers, I don't know. They're launching something, so they brought over America's only registered actual superhero. There's a man called Phoenix Jones who dresses up like a nitwit and walks around Seattle solving crimes. Well, he doesn't solve crimes. He's a busybody. But he's rolled an interesting story about Phoenix Jones. He's here with his girlfriend, Purple Rain. R-E-I-G-N. Don't even ask. And they're here and they're a crime-fighting duo. But he tells the story of why he does this. He had his car window broken. And he came out to the car and his young son cut his hand and got a piece of glass in his finger, which they had to take out with tweezers. As a result of this crime, Batman's mum and dad were shot in the head. That is why he is the Dark Knight. That we can understand. If my son cut his hand, I would say, couldn't you see that the window was broken, you idiot? Why have you put your hand in there? I wouldn't then think, and I'll tell you what else I'm going to do. Have we still got that latex costume that I used to wear? When I was slim, I will get it down here. And that's
what
it
is. Who's your favourite superhero, Bob? Who do you like best?
My favourite superhero? I'm a big fan of David Cameron. I think. I don't know, really. I used to like the old one.
Jolly Green Giant, he was good.
He was good.
He wasn't a superhero. He was.
He could,
he could bring you sweet corn at any time, day or night.
And there was Green Cross Man.
I like that one. It was the one with the special car and the bulletproof thing and he wears white. The Pope. He's good.
He's infallible. How powerful is that?
How cool is that? That is seriously cool. The world's first superhero summit took place this week in London, attended by Seattle crime fighters Phoenix Jones and Purple Rain. The summit was actually a marketing stunt to launch a new mobile phone and took place in East London's Bethnal Green Road. Think Gotham City, but more foreboding. These superheroes who attended are actually part of a growing number of costumed activists who patrol American cities. The Crimson Fist, for example, patrols Atlanta, although he no longer goes to the park area at night due to some unfortunate misunderstanding. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Mr. Hardy.
This was brought in by Samira's daughter, and it says, tributes to legend who collapsed and died in the pub. 58-year-old customer named locally as Tony Saunders suffered a heart attack in the Escape Sports Bar. Billy Ford, 62, said, I can't remember a word he said to me in all those years, even though he stood next to me every afternoon. He'd buy a drink, he'd stand next to me. That was enough. It was about his presence. I'll find someone else to stand next to. But I'll miss him. He was a top man.
Ms. Martinez.
A woman has complained to Swiss Federal Railways after being sprayed with poo from a defective train toilet. She was given a 10-franc travel voucher and an umbrella.
Ms. Ahmed.
This is from Gareth Nortier. This is from What's Up Cape Town. Dancers Love Dogs is an annual fundraising show involving dancers who love animals. Brigitte Reeve Taylor commits to producing the heartwarming show every year, and all the proceeds go to mass sterilisation.
Mr. Mills.
This is from Graham Elliott, and it's from the restaurant chain Prezzo. To toast Andy Murray winning Wimbledon, come and enjoy a complimentary glass of Prosecco when you purchase a main course. Due to strict licensing laws, our Scottish restaurants can only offer a complimentary soft drink.
Take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Francesca have got 11 points, but this week's runaway winners are Samira and Bob with 14. Before we leave you, here is a cutting taken from the Huddersfield Examiner sent to us by Rhonda Bennett.
The defendant was found guilty of driving while drunk and handed a £3,000 fine plus 6 penalty pints.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Francesca Martinez, Samira Ahmed and Bob Mills. In the chair was Sandy Toksworth, and the news was read by me, Susan Ray. The chair's script was written by Carol Carter, Lucy Clark and Roderick Crooks, with additional material by Ben Harris and James Budd. The producer was Sam Michel.